Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Kate Ganim and Jen Reeves from Superhero Boost. Tell me a little bit about Superhero Boost.
Sure. So Superhero Boost is a design-your-own prosthetic workshop that we do for kids with physical differences. So they learn tools and technology. They work very closely with designers and engineers, and they develop their own body modifications.
So how would some of their designs tend to be more unique or stand out more from just your average, everyday prosthetic?
I think the big... Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, jump in, Jen.
Well, I think they're different because we are giving the kids the opportunity to come up with anything. It's a blank slate. So if they've had prosthetics in the past, they don't have to think about what is traditional. They're just thinking about something fun and different.
So
yeah, and for us, we're interested in opening up the questioning to the kids of, you know, why stop at the functionality of a hand when it could do literally anything that you want? So challenging kids with that question and just inviting them to explore that and seeing what they come up with.
Yeah, magic happens when you don't say no and you just let them go.
Even to glitter.
Even to glitter.
So, are there any challenges in providing this service? And
yeah, of course. So, one of the biggest challenges always is funding, getting the funding in place to do the next one. We would love to do more of these, and that's been kind of the major limiting factor for it. Another challenge is that, particularly with the upper limb difference population, there isn't a density of that demographic, so necessarily the families are having to travel across the country to attend just to get enough of those kids in one place. Another part that's been a really fun challenge, I would say, is we partner the kids, so it's an intensive five-day workshop that we do. We partner the kids up with designers and engineers afterwards to continue developing their designs, which they're usually working remotely, and there's always different challenges that come up through that process.
So I'd like to look at the converse side of things. Has there been any success moment that stands out for you each?
What's magical about this workshop is kids are seeing that they have a different perspective and a different view when it comes to design. And so they suddenly have a new opening towards a career path, or just knowing that because they see things differently, it's a creativity that the typical kid may not have. And that's exciting.
Yeah, there have been a few. There are so many moments throughout the week that have been really amazing and inspiring. anytime we do one of these workshops, a lot of times it's like seeing kids coming out of their shell and building that confidence, and kind of the look on their face when they get a device that, you know, they had the concept for and they've been working really hard and having challenges, but when they finally get it working in the end, is a really powerful moment.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the more imaginative designs that have come out of this?
Yeah, Jen, do you want to tell us about Project Unicorn?
Sure. So Project Unicorn is a result of a Superhero Boost workshop in 2016. My daughter invented a prosthetic arm that shoots glitter. And in its evolution, it now only shoots biodegradable glitter, because we want to make sure that we're mindful to the environment. But that project caught a lot of attention, and it's been a really exciting way for my daughter to show that disability is really opportunity and a great way to talk about it being different and having fun. The project continues. She's working on new iterations with her design buddy, who is now the director of design for the nonprofit that we launched. And it's all an evolution from a Superhero Boost workshop. It's pretty remarkable.
So how does the community typically respond to the designs?
Which community? There's a lot of communities.
Just in general, when society sees a child who's had a custom device created through one of your workshops, does it serve as a pathway to open that conversation about...
Totally. Yeah. These different devices and ideas and concepts really open up a conversation about opportunities with the combination of disability. So I know that my now 12-year-old has been able to talk more about limb differences and physical disabilities because of this cool creation. And some of our other kids have been able to come up with new ideas that they're evolving from. And they're able to talk more about their differences as well. I think it's a really great, not only conversation piece, but it's a great way to educate.
So,
and I would add to that too, part of our intention is for it would be awesome if the kids, if people see them in a way that is more celebrating that difference, and you know, maybe going up to the kid saying, "Whoa, that's so cool, I wish that I had one of those." If they're approached by another kid like that, that's such a different interaction than what they get with a more traditional prosthetic. So kind of like flipping that conversation a little bit and reframing their disability as a super ability, just as a way too for other people to see them and their physical difference in a different light.
Like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No problem.
Yeah.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Ken Pope, a disabilities estate planning expert who's been using a series of webinars to get the message out to the disability community. So tell me a little bit about your background in disabilities estate planning.
Well, I did a presentation in February 26th of 96 to the local Schizophrenia Society chapter in Ottawa. And I had been asked to fill in for another lawyer that didn't know anything about Henson Trust either, because, of course, this was 96. And so I did the presentation, and I came to realize how many families there were that didn't know about Henson Trust, or if they did, didn't know where to get one. So I thought, well, that's very interesting. And the core value from my practice is to do good and do well. So I started out when I first went to law school trying to, you know, the idea was to change the world, right? So it occurred to me that helping families with kids with special needs was a way to do good and do well. And so I learned about Henson Trusts and then proceeded to find families that needed them and started to do the work. And from 96 onward, I traveled around the province most months, did seminars in different places. The first seminar I did in Windsor was in September of 2000, and you know, it was very well received. because there was a very great hunger for the information about how to plan for my child when I'm gone. And I've just gone on from there. I've built my practice over all those years to continually to add services that, that families with special needs need. And it's a lifelong service. You start out when the child is 3 and is diagnosed with autism and goes on until they approach 18 and they people need advice about applying for provincial disability benefits. And in the meantime, they've had difficulty with the local school board. And then the child turns 18 and they're receiving $869, you know, which is the room and board amount rather than the higher shelter plus supplementary of, $1,189 now. And we then find that people have not used disability tax credits and caregiver credits. And, of course, if the child is not approved for the disability credit, they can't have a registered disability savings program plan. And if they don't have an RDSP, then they can't contribute $1,500 and get $4,500 for 20 years and on and on. And then finally, one day, the parents die. And we then have to assist with probate and setting up the Henson Trust and investing the assets and disclosure to ODSP and on until one day the beneficiary, the child with special needs, they turn 65, so they're no longer on ODSP. So we help them to move to old age security and guaranteed income supplements. And then one day the child dies, and whoever is the residual beneficiary in the trust gets what's left. So it's a lifespan service that just keeps gradually adding things that are of value to these families. And my staff and I all specialize in some area of this practice so that they become the best there is with this particular piece of the work. And it's very gratifying work. You know, you're working with great families. You're working with families that have had the chance to become more human than other families. And I don't mean any disrespect to the other families, but no. Anytime you've got somebody who spends their whole lifespan until the day they die caring for their child with special needs, there's a little extra touch of humanity there in my estimation.
So are there any challenges in setting up the Henson Trusts and going through the processes to make sure that these children are taken care of?
Well, you need somebody who knows what they're doing, obviously. You need to plan to have all the pieces to the puzzle. You have to have trustees, for example. Well, who do you know that is a trustee that is more or less the age of your child? When they're young, you don't know anyone. You know, at that point, perhaps if you're lucky, you have a brother or a sister, an aunt and uncle to the child, who could be the trustee if you kick the bucket. You know, this is a standard conundrum for all parents of children, all parents, because the biggest question they have to answer is, if I die, who will take care of my child? Who will be their guardian? And then, of course, if you have a child with special needs, it's another question, because, of course, those needs will never go away. It's not like this child is going to become, you know, 25 and finish university and get married and have kids and so on. So it's a lifelong concern. So, and we try to deal with this as time goes by. We try to comfort people and advise them that they have to make the best decision they can with what they have now. And, you know, logically, they're really not going to die next year. And in 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, they can revise things. So it's an advising process to help provide peace of mind.
So
I would say that's what we really sell, is peace of mind.
So in your experience planning disabilities estates and supporting these families, has there been any success moment that really stands out for you?
Well, the part that I really enjoy the most, you know, it's all very enjoyable and kind of gratifying, but the part I enjoy the most is when I'm able to get people back their tax credit money. Because people pay taxes. They work hard, they pay taxes, maybe they get some supports, you know, for their child as a result. Perhaps they do. But we find very commonly that people are not using the disability and caregiver tax credits at all or appropriately. So what we do is we identify this, and then we get the T2201 form completed by a doctor, and you have to make sure that it's done correctly so that it's approved by Canada Revenue, because Canada Revenue is pushing back. There's no question about that. And so then we get all these credits approved, and we file the tax adjustments, and this whole process takes about 12 months, you know. And every time something happens that is a setback or you have to provide more information, it doesn't just continue to proceed. It starts again, and you've got another six-month waiting period. But an example of my happiness is that what we get for these families is we typically get about $16,000 from a 10-year back filing for the disability credit and $7,000 for the caregiver credit. And what this is taxes they paid that they should not have paid over the last 10 years, because that's as far back as we can go, which has been then returned to them. And I have had files where we have had a family where there's multiple disabilities, you know, two teenage boys with autism plus a father with his own disabilities and a mother with her own disabilities, where these credits are transferred to his mother, who's still she's on pension now, but she pays taxes, and she has moved out of her house to let them live there. And we backfile the credit against the mother because the family itself doesn't pay taxes, and recapture, in one case, $60,000 for the grandmother, in another case, $44,000. So those are the memories that I'm most fond of. I will do.
So you had one more quick point you wanted to bring up.
Well, there's been a change in the caregiver tax credit. Until 2017, the caregiver tax credit, which reduces taxes for a caregiver with whom a child or a family member with special needs resides, they had to reside with them until 2016, the end of 2016. But in 2017, the reside with criteria was removed. So what this means is that instead of just the 46,000 people on ODSP who live with family, the full 360,000 families, I'm convinced, would qualify for the caregiver tax credit. And what this does is that it reduces their taxes by $1,000 a year, going forward every year from when the child is 18, which is the year they start ODSP. So what this does is it now reduces taxes in the province of Ontario for just this segment of 360,000 people, which is my core concern, by $1,000 each per year. 360,000 times 1,000. And of course, no one knows this.
Thank you very much.
You're quite welcome.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Innovative Designs for Accessibility student competition is now open and ready to inspire students to create innovative and effective ideas that can resolve accessibility barriers within our community. Group or alone, undergraduate or graduate, full-time or part-time, the competition is open to all University of Windsor students that are willing to submit and present an idea for a chance to earn cash prizes up to $500. Competition closes January 31st. If you have any questions or concerns, you can email idea@uwindsor.ca. That's idea@uwindsor.ca. Or visit uwindsor.ca/OHREA/idea-competition for more details.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that promotes recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Kate Ganim and Jen Reeves about a very unique prosthetics workshop. And from Ken Pope, who shared a little bit about disabilities estate planning. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Landon Catt, who invented something very unique for the disability community. So Carrie Wright mentioned you had built an accessible ATV.
Yeah, I built a couple, actually. I built one that I sold to him, and then I built a newer one again since then.
So can you tell me a little bit about how you made it accessible?
Sure. Well, I'm a C5-6 quadriplegic, so quite limited arm strength and no grip. So to start with, I added electric power steering to it out of a Saturn SUV. I just got the parts from a wrecking yard to make the steering extremely light and easy. Put a tri-pin spinner knob on the steering wheel so I could grip, and then basically just fashioned my own hand controls with assortment of different rods and rod ends and things like that. Made it so it fit inside the buggy so that I could use it with my abilities.
So, do you find that there are enough vehicles and outdoor recreational opportunities for people with disabilities?
If you have the vehicle, there, you can go where everyone else can go. But as far as I know, there isn't too many that you can just buy ready to go. I did see one company down in the States that was making units, but that's all I've ever heard of.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your background? Were you born as a quadriplegic? Or?
I used to race motocross, and I was out practicing and crashed and broke my neck. The bikes and rode ATVs and raced cars and things, so of course it's something that I still want to try and do. And a few years after injury, I decided to see if I could get back into something like that.
So that was the inspiration behind creating this ATV then?
One of my best friends that I used to ride dirt bikes with all the time ended up buying a acreage with a good chunk of trails on it. So we were joking around. I said, well, if you're buying that, I'm going to buy myself a dune buggy or something to come out there and ride with you. So it started as kind of a joke, and then I decided, why not see if I can do it? So the first one that I sold Carrie was kind of a proof of concept. It was a cheaper one just to make sure that I could actually drive it. And it took a couple of years to get it to the point where both I was strong enough and it was modified correctly that I could use it. And then once I got that, then I wanted, bigger, better, faster kind of thing.
Do you see yourself making more of them, creating sort of the model for others?
I like to create things to make my life easier. And if, I try and share any ideas I have with people like Carrie and other friends that are in similar situations so we can all benefit from what one of us has figured out. We share back and forth.
So if you could send any message to the disability community about why it is that they should keep on doing those things that they love, injuries notwithstanding, as you did, what would you say?
Your life doesn't end because you got injured. I can't do everything I used to do, but I sure try. It's all done differently, but you can always find a way for most things. Just keep trying and work towards what you want to do, and it's amazing what you can still accomplish even with an injury.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, you betcha.
People have always said, necessity is the mother of invention, my friends. And that's very true in the disability community. For the fact is, it is necessary for them to do what they love to do, to be a part of the community, to have opportunities created for them. Everyone from that little girl who invented the glitter hand to our friend Landon, who created his own ATV just so he could continue to do the sport that he loved. The fact of the matter is, we can always create something bigger, better, stronger, faster. It's important that we as a community keep pushing forward. Ken's interview, he referenced the change in the disability caregiver laws. What's available is just that, creating opportunities for those who support those who have disabilities, just giving them what they need to to be at their best so they can serve and provide at their best. Truth is, you can't give what you don't have. And if a person feels trapped or pressured or there's no hope for them, they won't be able to give as effectively. They won't be able to say to a person with the same degree of confidence or strength that, yes, we can find a way. Yes, we can do this. We can give you what you need to be at your best, to be in the community, to be a part of it all. And the truth of the matter is, if we can create an accessible ATV that relatively easily, there's no stopping us. It's just a matter of looking at things from the right lens, asking the question, okay, these are the circumstances. How do I make this work? How do I cater this to what I love to do, what I want to do, what I need to do? The truth is, my friends, if you're thinking outside the box, you'll find a way, inevitably. In a lot of cases, all it takes to inspire a person is to say it's impossible. It's never an easy practice challenging a precept. It's never easy saying, I choose to defy convention. I choose to see that there's a way. But it's the most necessary thing in all of life to grow us as a people. Oh yes, we can cling to our illusions that the able-bodied are stronger, smarter, more capable, more deserving. But doesn't make it any more true. We can choose to look the other way, but the fact is, we as a people are determined to make progress. Progress will not stop for anyone who denies an opportunity. If a business is inaccessible, the laws governing what has to be in place to provide access for a person with a disability are still going to be there. Opportunities are waiting to be made, my friends. The truth is, when I heard the story of Superhero Boost, I was just enamored with the whole idea. These kids might actually feel isolated or ostracized or ashamed of having a prosthesis. That should never be the case. These are people. Yeah, there's something about them made special, made unique. But if they can have a chance to design something that's a reflection of who they are as an individual, it speaks to the point that there's still hope, there's still a spark of life, a spark of personality in these people. And that if nurtured correctly, they can go on and become the great leaders that we as a society need. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, and the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Simple truth of it is, my friends, sometimes all it takes to find out what's meaningful and what's worthwhile in life is to look our so-called limitations in the eye and say, you're not going to prevail today. You're not going to overtake my sense of self-worth, my capabilities. Sometimes all you have to do is be willing to take that chance. You may succeed, you may not, but at least you'll be better for the experience. At least you'll have taken a moment to ask, can I grow beyond what everyone thinks I am, and answer the question of who I really am. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.